Good morning to all Gamecocks out there. Today's Tuesday, February 17th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're doing well today. Hope you made it through Monday. Yesterday was very much so a make it through Monday for yours truly. And Mad Dog and I on the show, I think, I don't know. Sometimes the losing gets to us too, folks. So it was sort of a melancholy Meatloaf Monday on the show yesterday. So I don't know, hard to apologize for that, but, let's just say we're all in better spirits today. Coming up on Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show, Jamie Bradford's got a full house, Matt Smitty Smith, of Four Quarter Friday Sports Talk and, our Chief Sports Network here. We'll be in to co-host for an hour. They always have great conversations. Preston Thorne, former Gamecock defensive lineman, is in for his weekly segment, and the voice of champions, Brad Muller, who will be calling the Gamecock baseball game tonight as Derek is in Florida for men's basketball. He will be joining Jamie as they head up to Spartanburg, the baseball team, first ever game at Fifth Third Park. Beautiful park there in my hometown, home of the Hub City Spartanburgers, where they'll be playing the Wofford Terriers. I didn't know this in the game notes for the first time since 2017. South Carolina frequently plays Wofford and a litany of sports. I didn't know baseball had been that long, though. So that's a while there. Of course, Tyler Bach is a transfer from Wofford, so he's facing his former team. They had a pretty good little squad up there at Wofford. It hadn't always been the case for Wofford baseball, but they've done some nice things in recent years right there off of Church Street in Spartanburg. But the ballpark's beautiful if you're in the upstate. Go out. I don't know what the weather's like down there. I haven't checked it today. Probably should have. But if it's a great night for baseball, first pitch is at 5:30. Connor Ciccoli, according to the release from the athletic department, I know that JB was speculating it may be another starting pitcher, but Connor Ciccoli, sophomore from Georgia Tech, transfer in Raleigh, North Carolina native, 6'3", 185 righty. He will get the start for the Gamecocks tonight. The game will be on ESPN Plus. That's different than SEC Network Plus, and it's because it's a Wofford home game. So whatever the SoCon package is, that'll be your television streaming. I know the one at Winthrop a couple of years ago got interesting, but they're in a minor league ballpark, so we will see how that goes. I'm probably going to So I love listening to baseball on the radio. It's awesome. I'm probably going to stick with Brad and Stewart, those guys, kind of like I did this past weekend. There is men's basketball tonight. They play at Florida, the number 12 team in the country, the first place team in the SEC, the defending national champions, and a team that beat the Gamecocks by 47 points at Colonial Life Arena just a couple of weeks ago. So tough draw this year, getting the Gators twice. That normally has not been the case with the schedule, but it rotates. And so the Gamecocks did have to play Florida twice and have to go down to the O'Connell Center. Their program is rolling again right now under Todd Golden. And, you know, all you can do is go try in this situation as a heavy underdog. So we'll see what happens there with the men's basketball team. Women play on Thursday night at Alabama. It's a late tip, 8:30, I believe, is that. Then softball heads to the West Coast this weekend for a five games. UCLA's in there. Looks like kind of a bear as far as that goes, but JB will fill you in on all that and talk about Ashley Chastain Woodard's team and all that good stuff. So got a lot going on in the spring. Football spring practice is right around the corner. As we all know, it starts March 4th. Gamecocks are still searching for – still searching. They've just started searching for a special teams coordinator. We'll see how that unfolds in the coming weeks. But it's time to start talking about some objectives for spring practice. And we got a nice, I guess, run through the defense here on Coffee recently by position, defensive line. Haven't talked a lot about the linebackers. Kind of go back and forth with them, with the front or the back end. I think South Carolina has some players that are proven at that position coming back. It's kind of like two P's, proven players, proven they can play, not necessarily make a difference, but play. They've shown signs. They've, as they say, flashed. But proven and then potential. So for the linebackers to get to where they need to go, they do have to improve this year. But you had a lot of first-year guys last season, so I like that unit a lot. Didn't dedicate a whole episode to them. Will at some point though. We'll dive in because the interesting thing to me about the linebackers, I think the top three are pretty much nailed down. They only play two at a time, as we know, all know. But who's going to be the fourth? Who's the Jerron Willis role? Jerron went to Kansas, transferred out to Kansas. I think maybe so he could play a little more, just because Murphy and Johnson and Justin O rarely came off the field. But who's going to be that fourth guy? Is it going to be Donovan Darden? Is it going to be AJ Holloway? You know, all those second-year guys, those linebackers that South Carolina brought in the 2025 class, you know, as second-year players, they're in a better position to get out there and compete for playing time. So we'll talk about the linebackers. We've gone through the defense, went through the secondary yesterday. So as far as objectives go, these are much less about like personnel. We're going to talk personnel like we always do, but it's much more about overall objectives. Like what, you know, if you're in the brain of Shane Beamer, or if you're in the brain of Kendall Briles on offense, you know, what are you hoping to accomplish from, you know, a 10,000 foot view? And these are just the things I think will be important and things to kind of watch, because they're going to, in my opinion, determine the chances of success in the fall. You know, I don't make any prediction. I don't like record predictions. People ask me to do it sometimes, and because every game is based on different scenarios, and some of those scenarios are just completely unpredictable. You just don't know. I mean, you don't know. You're still dealing, no matter how many times people want to say that it's now the NFL or professionalized or whatever, you're still dealing with young people. And that's a direct reason why Indiana won the national championship. They asked Steve Spurrier, he had a press conference on Zoom about being inducted to the South Carolina Athletic Hall of Fame. Hats off to him, by the way. Congratulations, coach. And he was asked about how South Carolina could maybe be Indiana, and he kind of chuckled and said, well, they need to hire Kurt Cignetti. And he mentioned some of the things we've been talking about here about the Hoosiers. Like, they just play harder than everybody else. They don't make mistakes. Spurrier, of course, you know, his mind is he's still got like a photographic memory and is very sharp, and goes, well, they almost did. They almost messed it up there at the end. Just like he was coaching them. You know, they just won national championships. Well, you almost messed it up there. So, anyway, you know, that's kind of the world we live in. And, you know, some of these other teams that may have had top to bottom more future NFL players, you know, your young people simply didn't play as hard, simply didn't play as smart, play as well. They weren't as ready. And like in the case of Oregon, they got a pretty daggum good coach. You know, Dan Lanning has navigated the money thing better than just about anybody else. They have a lot of money at Oregon to spend, but his teams typically are well coached and play hard. They just have lost three games the last 2 years, once to Ohio State, won the national championship, and then twice to Indiana, which won the national championship. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with the coaching. It's just hard, you know, these days to get folks going and playing. So, with that said, you don't know the mentality game to game because coaches don't really know. So it's hard to predict records. So I don't make any guarantees. And the schedule's tough. CBS came out with something the other day that predicted the Gamecocks would be one of the first teams out of the college football playoff. You know, it had them 25th or something. A bold prediction. And that's plausible. You know, stranger things have happened. Carolina has a lot of good players coming back, and I believe the plan on offense is better, but you know, there's no guarantee because you don't. I mean, like at Florida, you know, Florida's got 40 or 50 new players, but they've got a good young core. A lot of their players stuck with the program instead of transferring out. John Summerall's won everywhere he's been. You know, I've said before, I don't know that he's the best fit at the University of Florida because I think fit's important at that particular school. But you don't know what they're going to be like when you go down to the swamp in October. You know, right now they're a 4-8 ball team, just like the Gamecocks, but you don't know what Tennessee, well, if Aguilar is, eligible if the courts in Tennessee decide he can get his, what, seventh year of playing, eighth in college football, then Tennessee's going to be a lot more formidable than maybe a season where, they have a new quarterback and they're relying on a new plan on defense with Jim Knowles coming in, who's very good, and all that. That they may be, Tennessee may be more like the team that actually went to the playoff with Nico than they were this past year, where, they could score with just about anybody. So you don't know. You didn't know this past year. Who knew that Texas A&M would, win all their games until Texas? But then we look back on it and go, like, well, they luck. Didn't luck at. I'm not gonna say lucked out, but when you got Auburn, Florida, and South Carolina, some folks predicted those teams to be in the playoff, and you avoid Oklahoma, which did get to the playoff, and you avoid Alabama, which did get to the playoff, and all that, and your A&M, and your best win is a, well, two best wins are a 1-point win over Notre Dame team, which made had a strong argument for getting into the playoff, and didn't lose again, and then the night LSU quit in Baton Rouge, and the Notre Dame game was way at the beginning of the year, and then Miami, Texas and Miami get you at the end. Was that a great team? Or was that a team that had a fortunate schedule allotment? So you just don't know, especially nowadays. It's crazy. So South Carolina's schedule looks, CBS mentioned this, that, oh, it's a lot, looks a lot easier. But is it? We don't know. Could be, could not be, to be or not to be. I know this. It would have been helpful to have Mississippi State and Florida and maybe even Tennessee on the schedule this past year. Tennessee at home, especially at Williams-Brice, not Knoxville. Knoxville's a, I mean, that's a house of horrors for the Gamecocks, as is the Swamp. But, I'd have liked to have seen those teams instead of going to A&M, going to Ole Miss, going to Missouri. This past year. So maybe it is, but I don't think we can base 2026 on 2025 based on the number of new players and the transition and all this stuff, the NIL factor. So I don't make predictions. I don't make any promises, and I want to be clear about that. When we talk about these objectives, though, I just, you got to talk about it, you got to analyze it, and it's got to be somewhat relevant. I can't just sit here and be like, well, let's talk about the depth chart again. G Bird, Snuffleupagus from, and that's kind of how the show yesterday went. Like Snuffy from Sesame Street. Bird, gosh, I don't know that the Gamecocks are ever going to win again, Bird. Or Eeyore, or whatever sad animal that you'd like to talk about from your childhood. Or maybe my childhood if you're younger and don't remember. Snuffleupagus or Eeyore, but can't just sit there and do that. So you gotta find a way and talk about kind of what could go right and what could go wrong. So that's the, and so these are overall objectives. It's a long way of saying, this is what we're going to talk about here in February, and just kind of a guideline, and we'll see, kind of trace it through spring ball and all the way through summer, and see what happens when they kick it off against Kent in September. All right, so I'm going to go 5-1, kind of based on, the five would be the lowest priority of the top priorities, and then one would be, I think we'd all agree, the most important. So five, the tight end roles are interesting in this offense, and we've talked about it before with the fact that Kendall Briles uses, during his career, he's used tight ends a lot differently. Really at each stop, and that's the idea behind this offense, as it's adaptable to who you have, which is awesome, I think. And really, that's been Shane Beamer's idea the whole time. It's not really been the what, it's been the how, where there's kind of been some funky disconnect, because in theory, an NFL style offense is supposed to accomplish that. As far as, what are you emphasizing? On a yearly basis, just kind of the basics of it. It's like, well, we can pass and we can run. That's very, very simple. And when I talk about that, I agree with Beamer's vision for the offense. A vision is different than a plan. The vision would be, yeah, something adaptable because from year to year, your personnel changes. The plan obviously left a lot to be desired. So the plan now is to kind of go the other direction with a college, collegiate slash high school style offense. And, and please know this, when I talk about a high school style offense, that's praise for me because you've heard me say it before. I love high school offenses. I think it's where some of the best coaching is done because you're not drafting nor recruiting most of the time in high school now these days with all the with some transfers popping up. But you're kind of limited to what you've got, and so you've got to find a way to coach around deficiencies and to emphasize strengths. And Art Briles came up with an aggressive, creative, and fun style of play to do that. And that's why Baylor, and really everywhere Kendall's been, they've improved on offense because it's adaptable to the college game. And it's proven to be adaptable to the college game. But at tight end, that's kind of what it is. It's one where, well, if you got a bunch of guys that can go out there and block, they're going to primarily be blockers and helping the run game, pass game, that kind of stuff. You got a guy that's kind of going to be an H-back type that can line up in the backfield, fullback H-back type, then that's probably what they're going to do, use some lead blockers on some plays and things like that. You got a guy that's maybe a split tight end type, Jared Cook type of guy, Josh Simon. Back in the day, or Jared Cook back in the day, Josh Simon more recently, Trey Knox, who Kendall had at Arkansas. You're probably going to do more that style. Jamie Bradford did some research on tight end catches and usage. And compared to Baylor back with Art Briles, Kendall Briles has used the tight end in the passing game a lot more. So that's kind of a thing, for him. Do the Gamecocks have a passing threat? Or reception threat at tight end. The question is, I don't know. I think so. I think Brady Hunt needs to get more consistent with his blocking. He kind of was a feast or famine blocker last year. There were some plays where he just whiffed and looked like he didn't know how to block at times. I mean, he knows how to block, but he just missed it. Like a lot of guys on the team last year. And then there were times he would block pretty well. In the pass game, though, with the ball in his hands, I thought Brady Hunt from year one to year two at South Carolina got better. I thought, hey, this guy, when he catches the ball, he's consistent with it. Like a lot of the receivers, didn't have a lot of opportunities, but I thought at the end of the day, he was, pretty good at that. So he's kind of Brady's the projected starter. So, how do you use him in this system? Well, maybe that play they were running in the Coastal game where he got under center and scored two rushing touchdowns. I'm not saying that exact play, but can he line up as an H-back in the backfield? He's 6'5", 251. I think blocking-wise, he need to get, and I'm not going to say more physical, but more consistently physical. Is he a guy that plays attached and splits sometimes? More of a hybrid type guy that, like he's been doing in his role. It's an interesting concept. What's the outlook for Brady Hunt as far as, we know he's, blocking's got to get better, but we also know how's he going to get the ball? Or is he going to get the ball an equal number? Is he going to be a weapon in the pass game? So those are questions for him. And I think just from where I stand, his usage would be a little different than everyone else's. All these guys. Mike Tyler is a player that they're really high on. He's a player that redshirted last year, I believe. He's going in the second year. He's from Hammond. Of course, they flipped him from LSU. He's 6'4", 250. Got him a reception against LSU. I mean, against Coastal last year. He's, from what I'm told, a pretty good blocker. A guy that I could see maybe being a little more attached. When I say attached, I mean on the line of scrimmage next to the tackle. Just for those that aren't familiar with that term, maybe split out some. Is he more of a blocker? In my opinion, right now, probably, but I need to see more. Obviously, you didn't see him a whole lot running routes, things like that. So we'll see about him and Max Drag, who is coming in from UCF. Darren Usher described him as a dirt dog. I think he's more of a blocker fullback type. Just a guy that's going to get out there and block and love it. Now, we also said that about Nate Atkins, and Nate Atkins down the stretch in 2022 did that. And then lo and behold, the guy can catch and he's in the NFL. Lo and behold, he became a receiving threat. If he hadn't gotten injured in the Gator Bowl, I think Carolina beats Notre Dame because he was a big part. It was a big part of the offensive game plan. He goes out, and there's no more tight ends. They're out. Where are your tight ends, sir? Well, we're out of tight ends. It's like the McDonald's milkshake. The tight end machine is broken. How about that? But so we said that. So, but who knows? But that's the scouting report on him coming in. Caden Ramsey is coming in from the high school ranks. Definitely more of a split out guy, like a big wide receiver type at this point. Because that's kind of how he was used in high school. It's Cross. I like him. I think sooner or later he'll make an impact on the program. The good thing about him playing in a Kendall Briles offense is that if he's good enough to get on the field, they'll find a way to use him, right? So Caden Ramsey is a player that you got to kind of look at for the future mostly, but we'll see what happens. And then Usher, in his interview with us a couple of weeks ago, said maybe if they find a tight end, they'll sign a tight end. You still got some walk-ons there too. So I think the challenge, and it's not a big challenge, it's basically evaluating your roster. But, one of the objectives has to be for Briles and Sean Elliott and everybody responsible for tight ends is to figure out who fits with in what role and how do you use them. And that's an objective because, you got to use them somehow. And how you kind of determine that as an offensive coordinator is, well, what's going to be better for the offense? Is to have a tight end out there, maybe go four wide where you can get the ball. You have more playmakers on the field. What's harder to stop? That kind of thing. So that'll be interesting. The tight end usage is a fascinating offseason topic for me. I think it's going to fundamentally change. Whereas, now you may see a tight end in the room line up at a number of different technical spots. Before it was sort of, they put guys in the backfield sometimes as fullbacks and things like that. But you basically, under the last three offensive coordinators here, last four really, counting Mike Bobo, was more of a traditional tight end type. They would split Josh Simon out a little more than maybe they did, but it was a pro tight end usage concept. Of course, now the pro tight end usage concept compared to when I was growing up. You had Brent Jones of the 49ers out there catching passes from Montana. He, Jason Witten, those guys, gosh, if you were pulling for a team playing against them, they were very annoying, because you'd be worried about stopping this guy like at Tennessee. Peerless Price played with Jason Witten, if I'm wrong about that. Tennessee had really good receivers. But then all of a sudden it'd be third and eight, and somebody'd throw an out pattern to Jason Witten, and he was money catching it. It just killed the Gamecocks. And then, I pulled for the Falcons growing up, you're playing the 49ers, and you're worried about Jerry Rice or Taylor and those guys, and Montana, and Roger Craig. And then all of a sudden, third and six, there goes Brent Jones right down the middle of the field, wide open. So that's kind of how they used to use the tight end. But now in the pros, obviously they use them in a lot of different ways as well. But it's a little less structured, is what I'm trying to say with that. So number four, who are the playmakers at wide receiver? And the discussion starts with Nick Harbor, but you got to have more than Nick Harbor, and there's a lot of names and there's a lot of possibilities. Nitro Tuggle, I encourage everyone to go watch Deputy Smitty, who dug into some Nitro Tuggle film. He points out against Southern Cal, Nitro Tuggle was a player that the Southern Cal defense really had a plan for. They bracketed him and stuff like that. And watching his physicality in that film breakdown and doing some research on my own, what are you going to get? Because you look at it and you're like, well, 34 receptions, that's not a whole lot, but it was at Purdue. And their offense got progressively worse as the season went on. But, you just kind of feel like going into his third year in this system, he could be a guy. He could be a guy. He's got a little Juice Wells in him to a certain extent. He's bigger than Juice. But the way he moves around and kind of runs with, is elusive after the catch while also being able to be physical. Because Juice, when I say physical, I mean, he could break tackles and things like that. Not necessarily saying he could go out there and play safety and dominate. Nitro is probably a little bit more physical. So there's that. What are you going to get out of Jaden Gibson? He's somebody you don't really have, a jump baller guy. And these are portal guys. And then, Donovan Murph, Jaden Sellers, Jordan Gidron, Lex Cyrus, the young guys. What's their outlook for this season? How much better are they going to be? Can they build on last year? And you can't play all of them. Charlie Mullaly would be a guy in that mix. But you can't play all of them. And Sequel Patterson's coming in over the summer, and he's another one that you can't rule out. So who are the playmakers? Mike Furey's got to identify those. The competition continues, but you got to get the kind of the rotation down and figure it out. And, at least there, before you get to Kent and during the spring, it starts. Like, find out exactly what you have there. Jaden Gibson is an example of finding out what you have. You know that a few years back, he was pretty doggone good, freshman All-American type. Has all the upside in the world, but what is he now? What is he now for? Is he a guy that can go out and, and with Nick Harbor, long as Nick takes another step forward, he's gonna be just fine. But I'm, in my opinion, as freaky as Nick Harbor is, and as much as I believe there is an opportunity for him to have a, really have a big productive year. His last year at Carolina and play his way into a high draft pick because he's just so freaky. I think you need more than that, especially in this offense. I mean, it's not, is he going to be a receiver like Xavier Leggett was his last year where he's just, you can't stop him? I don't know that I can say that right now. So I think they need more than that. And the good news is at this spot, they have a lot of options, but you got to identify them and see who is where. So that's kind of the objective for the receivers. I've mentioned the running back war, and there's six in the room now, and they're all different levels of talent. They're all kind of similar. Who comes out of there? Stan Drayton's going to have a big battle on his hands. Is it Howell? Is it Isaiah Gustav? Is it Matt Fuller? My money would be on Matt Fuller right now. Going in, I like Juwan Howell better than just about all of these guys. I think Christian Clark is a player that the coaching staff likes. So we went through all this in I think an episode last week. Jabri Coleman, what are you going to get there? Sam Dixon, what are you going to get there? That kind of thing. But it's a lot of competition at that spot. Kendall Briles last year, he's a play two back type of offense. Most of his top two backs end up getting a lot of carries and putting up numbers. Last year, TCU was no exception. And then they'll have a third team guy that comes in sometimes too. So who's going to come out of the pack as the top two? That's the question there. And that's the number three thing. Number two, and this may be number one, but I'm going to put it at number two. Because I think I would get some nasty emails or tweets or something questioning my sanity if I didn't put what's number one, number one. But Sellers in the scheme, Kendall Briles is an RPO guy. South Carolina's run some RPO. Well, Sellers, it's not a foreign concept to him. But, we want to talk about Indiana. Fernando Mendoza had that, and that wasn't some complicated scheme. That's a basic RPO-based college offense that executes. Well, it's important, as we all know, for Sellers to execute. It's got to become, for South Carolina and Lenoir Sellers to have the type of year they can. It's got all the reads in this thing have to become second nature. Now, the good news is they're not as complicated. That's the good news. You talk to anyone with a background in this type of system, and it's not, and everybody from Lane Kiffin to Josh Heupel to, Jeff Lebby. Offenses, quarterbacks learning this offense, it's not been a big challenge for most of them. And I don't expect it to be for Lenoir Sellers. I think they're, as far as the guts of everything goes, it's pretty good. But you still have to go out there and make the right reads in the RPO game. I cannot tell you honestly, that's been a strength of Lenoir's. Just watching some of the plays that I assume are RPOs or have been told were RPOs, you start making the run. RPO is usually based on the box, so you got to count the box, make sure, light box you run, blah, handoff, and then you have things you tag on to that, well, quarterback run option and stuff like that. It's hard to stop if you can execute it. Well, the quarterback has to execute it. And I think that if he can get that to be second nature, and then with his instincts, his football and playmaking instincts, when things break down, and marry those two together, it's going to be, the chances of success go up exponentially on offense this year. So you got to get that part of it down. Sellers in the scheme. Everything I've been told is it's like a new man. He's happy about this scheme, and that's good. That's good because you have NFL draft nicks wondering, openly questioning, oh gosh, well, Browse can't develop him for the NFL. Well, he's had two guys that had what combined 40 years of experience calling plays, developing quarterbacks in the NFL for the last 3 years. So I think anything you could possibly teach him about that level has been done. What he doesn't have, what he didn't have last year is a lot of production. And I think production, if you look at the end of the day, the draft nicks can say all they want, but your chances of being drafted higher as a quarterback are directly related to your production and your accomplishments. That's just how it is. I mean, Deshaun Watson drafted pretty high, right? Clemson's offense is not something that you would run in the NFL, or Clemson, or was. I guess what was is now with Chad Morris back there. Patrick Mahomes ran the air raid, and Andy Reid modified it. Josh Allen was in ran the option. And I've said this before. It really that part of it's overrated, severely overrated. Who was Mac Brown's OC for Drake May? Chip Lindsey, Gus Malzahn, they were in spread. I mean, it just doesn't matter. What matters is if you don't have a good year and you throw 11 picks and 8 touchdowns, your draft status is going downhill. It's just how it goes. And so Sellers and schemes very important. And then finally, find an offensive line. And I think, and that's a lot of there's a lot there for Randy Clements and Jason Smith, the assistant offensive line coach, to kind of unpack. There's 8 new guys from the portal. I think here's just my take on the who of it right now. I feel good about Peak being in the starting lineup. I feel good about Carter Miller being the starting center. Could be wrong. Shedd Surratt's going to play somewhere. He's too good not to. If Josiah Thompson is a right tackle, which I don't know that for sure, I could see Josiah being the right tackle. Deputy Smitty was on, so I just can't see him not being in the lineup. I think learning right tackle would be good for him because the more you can do, the better. Maybe it's a little less pressure and just sit out there and play. I don't know. Maybe it's more pressure. But I think Josiah Thompson, those four, gun to my head, if I had to predict, I have a hard time, much like Deputy Smitty, not seeing those four in the starting lineup. Now, could I be wrong? Absolutely. Look, predictions about the offensive line around here, or projections or opinions, Take it for what it's worth, right? But individually, I like those guys. I like those guys. Now, where they play, how exactly it shakes out, that's to be determined in spring practice. And you never know. I can almost guarantee this. Someone will come out of nowhere that we're not talking about, you know, like the kid from Missouri State, Boo Boo, or Rojo Poku from East Carolina. And he'll just get in the starting lineup and, you know, Hank Purvis, whoever, Dayton Arnett from Ferris State, one of those guys, they'll be in the starting lineup and we won't see it coming. It's the nature of the offensive line. But that's the most important objective when I'm talking about offensive objectives for spring practice. Find a five, get it going. It's going to take a while. When practice is open, there'll probably be a report. These were the five that went out to begin with. And as we all know, you can't read too much into it. Shane Beamer will let you know about it if you write it. But somebody's got to go out there first, and that's based on a number of things. But I do think Jacarius Peake at left tackle, I would be surprised if that didn't happen. You know, that said, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't see it. You know, there's a part of me that says this, that if Josiah Thompson at 6'7", 310, or 305, whatever he's listed at, evolves into a beast. And then you have Jacarius Peake that's played, you know, he played right tackle up until last year. Now he's proven, and he's been a lot better than Josiah. Do you play him at right tackle? I you know, the part of me, I'm saying that because in my mind, I've run that scenario. I just don't think it'll happen. I just don't see it. You know, I think you go and get a Peak, he's your left tackle, and everybody else can figure it out. You know, but I don't know. You know, maybe this is a different offense, and maybe, you know, obviously they like specific body types at different spots. Now, the right tackle, left tackle, right tackle is usually a little heavier, a little by 5 pounds or something. But so we'll see. We'll see how all that goes. But that's going to be interesting. We all know how the blocking's been around here. We all know how the offensive line's been around here. And that's if you want to not move the ball, that's the quickest way with this style of offense. You not only will not move the ball, but you can really make your defense look a lot worse than it is because you're not running much time off the clock. You're going three and out, three and out, three and out, getting dominated. And boom. Yeah, that's a key to disaster with this. Because your defense, if you're not moving, it's not being able to block and getting dominated by the elite defensive lines you're ultimately going to play. You know, Carolina doesn't play Georgia, thankfully, till November. I don't know about thankfully or not. November, the Dogs have been playing pretty well then. But, you know, imagine being bad on the offensive line and then not being able to block those guys. And so you're going backwards. And then meanwhile, Bobo and Dunner Stockton and their backs and they're just dinking and dunking and running it up the gut and just dom and that can get you know the scenario, fans. You know the scenario. So this has to work. And I don't expect miracles, but and I think that this style of offense is a little bit less pressure and a little bit less thinking for your offensive line. The big key for them is get lined up and hit somebody. Play your assignments, obviously. But that's the biggest objective for the spring. Find an offensive line. And they've got some options. They've got a lot of unknowns. It's exciting in a way, frightening in a way. But I think after what they've been through at that spot in that room the last couple of years, you know, really for a while, maybe it's time for some fresh faces. All right. Not giving up on anybody. Everybody that left, I think, ended up in the Power Four. It's not that they're not good players individually, but there's something not clicking there, obviously. Maybe it was just the scheme. Who knows? Anyway, folks, don't forget the morning show coming up with Brad Muller, the voice of champions. Also, Matt Smitty Smith will be in for an hour. Always enjoy his conversations. Preston Thorne in today. We'll be along with Terrible Tuesday. Going to probably bring up some quotes from Ray Tanner over the weekend about success being cyclical in men's sports. at South Carolina, and there's part of me that I'll just leave this teaser here. I agree and disagree to a certain extent with Coach Tanner on that, but I'll have an explanation and we'll get to it on Terrible Tuesday on the show with Mad Dog and myself. All right, this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. The dog's barking, so I have to go let him out. Everyone have a terrific, terrible Tuesday. Holla.